Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Mark from reflexivityspace.org. Today is December 21st, 2022. We have a special guest. Her name is Claire. I call her Claire from the UK. And we will conduct two interviews with Claire up front. So this is podcast number 6A. Next week we'll produce or record podcast 6B. I try to do this on Wednesday with Claire, like today, and publish on Wednesday or Thursday latest. Hello, Claire, are you there?
Hello, Mark. I'm here. Thank you very much for inviting me to
It's
take
a
part
pleasure. The
in
pleasure is shared this end, honestly.
oh,
Let
it's
me ask you,
very good of you.
before we go into details, maybe up front, can you tell people where they can find you?
Oh, okay. I'm on a channel on BitChute called Searching for the Evidence. That's also the same channel name on Getter. BitChute, I seem to be hard to find. So if you go into BitChute and put in the search bar Agenda 2031, the great switch off, you'll normally find me much more easily there. And I'm also on Deeper Truths on Odyssey. So there's three platforms that I've got my work on.
And that will be under the same name, is that correct?
Well, the same name, Searching for the Evidence, is on BitChute and Getter, but on Odyssey, I had already had a channel called Deeper Truths on Odyssey, which I've kept. I might try and amalgamate them all, so it's across the same name, but at the moment, the channel on Odyssey is called Deeper Truths, and it's at True Light Essence. So that's where people can find me on Odyssey, and therefore, if they want to download anything there and
That's
share it.
perfect. That's perfect, Claire. You know what we do? After the recording, please do provide me this information and I will link it.
Yes, be
Huh?
glad to.
I will link it on my own podcast series and I will link it as well in the social media that I do use. Would
Oh,
that be
that's
good?
great.
All right. Now, we. I came across you, or you came across me,
I think I found
reflexivityspace.org, correct? And we started to bond and connect over not long time, but yeah, a couple of weeks. And I was watching a couple of your contributions that are always kind of podcast-like as well, without video. You're talking to the people. Which I find very, very important because people tend to be more concentrated when using one sensory input. And from there, I started to follow you a little bit and I have listened to a couple of productions you did. They are very interesting. They're very interesting, mostly revolving around frequencies, I have to say. But the very first contribution from you that I have been listening to was your own experience and your husband's experience as a family during the corona hoax when your husband was diagnosed with cancer. And I can say we had a similar case in my family, where the second wife of my father fell, she already had it before, cancer, but then died during that time, and my experience at the hospital. But we are going
That
to
mark.
discuss your experiences and what happened, maybe a bit from a timeline perspective. Would you mind sharing a little bit what you
No.
have encountered?
Of course. And I just want to say, I'm not anything I say about what happened to us isn't an attack on the health service, because most people who work in the health service that we came across were exceptionally kind. And I do want to stress that. And they saved my husband's life, you know, so we're indebted to them for the help that he got. But a little bit of background, I do work with frequencies, and so I pick up on energy. I know when people are lying. I know when they're working with bad energy. I know quite a bit about frequencies because it's been part of me and part of my life for the last 12 years. And my husband's very switched in now to frequencies and how things feel. So we use that as a sort of barometer for lots of making decisions about life and being aware of making decisions to stay away from certain things. So I did ask my husband's permission before I've shared any information, because some of this is very private to him.
Absolutely.
And he normally doesn't share it even with people that we know quite well, but he wants to help people. He wants his experience to help others. And he felt that if I shared his history, which I think is pertinent to this, Mark, if it's okay. My husband, when he was younger, he was a very fit young man. And I saw pictures of him before I met him, and he was very fit, healthy, broad-shouldered, tall, handsome chap, did running, swimming, hockey, football, squash. He was into everything. And his mother, who isn't alive anymore, had always said to me after I met my husband, you know, he got ill. The only thing that was changed about what happened to him was he'd had a tetanus injection. That was the thing his mother, you know, mothers know best and they always sort of know things. So that was the thing she always pointed out. And we didn't have any, I'm vaccinated, my husband's vaccinated, I had to get vaccinated for travel. We didn't have any issues about vaccination. We had no thoughts on the subject. We were very mainstream people, just getting on with our busy lives. And my husband managed to hold down a job, which I don't know how he did, because he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. He collapsed in the shower shortly after this event of having the tetanus, which was the only unusual event. He was hospitalised. He was off work for 6 months, diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And when I met him, he was very poorly. And our whole marriage, he has been in and out of hospital more times than I can remember, collapsing frequently on Friday nights when the help in A&E was difficult to get because everybody's coming in because they've all been drinking and they've had fights and they're bleeding. And, you know, you've got all these other sick people who have got heart attacks and strokes. And, you know, in a way, it was quite stressful seeing what was going on in A&E during these emergencies with my husband. But leading up to in 2021, in October, my husband started losing weight, which can be part of Crohn's disease. At the time, it was very well managed. He's had a nurse of 30 years, and the hospital that he goes to are exceptionally good at keeping on top of him. He has to go every 3 months for tests, has to have regular, and I've been allowed to say this, colonoscopies to check for cancer. And because there's cancer in his family, they're very keeping an eye on things very closely. But when Corona, the Corona scandal, the hoax hit, which is what we perceive it to be, because we researched.
And, me too.
you know, and so we had a different view of what was going on in the world. We was looking at the system. I understand about mind control from what the information. I've been getting a lot of information over 12 years. I did write 5 books about it, and it's all sort of that was sort of my thing. I was being taught about energy and frequencies, and then when the Corona hoax started, we started listening to people who were saying what was in the vaccines, about mask wearing, about the lateral flow. I started getting information about the PCR tests, that they were taking our DNA and they were using it as data. That's what the point of the PCR was. We all know Carrie Mullis had always said, it's not a diagnostic tool. And so when my husband started getting ill and had this weight loss, you can attribute that to Crohn's disease. But There was a suspicion that he might have an infection because his CRP test showed abnormal cell counts. So the hospital were keeping an eye on that and liaised with our local GP, who were also very good. He was put on antibiotics for 2 weeks, but it didn't clear. Then they gave him more antibiotics. It didn't clear. His specialist nurse, who I say, she's just a wonderful, caring, competent nurse, very specialised in her field. She'd booked a basic scan for my husband. But when it progressed, as time progressed, and my husband wasn't getting better and losing more weight. He's so emaciated. You could see his hip bones. You could see his bottom bones. His thighs at the top were just as thin as, you know, as thin as my arms. He did look like he'd come out of a prisoner of war concentration camp. It was,
yes, I can picture this.
Very, very upsetting. And he was very weak. He was having night sweats. He had itchy skin and he was going yellow. Well, I saw that in my mother-in-law going yellow. She died of liver cancer. I saw it in my own mother who died of liver cancer. So obviously I'd taken him to the doctor on emergency appointments a few times. And as you know, because of the corona scandal, it was very difficult to get appointments. We couldn't get normal appointments. I had to phone and say, look, there's something seriously wrong with my husband. The antibiotics aren't working. There's cancer history in the family. I think everybody was looking at Crohn's. I think that was the problem, that they were all looking at Crohn's related because weight loss is part of it. I woke up one day and we'd had a few emergency trips to the doctor, but they just kept saying, we'll wait for this scan to come through. Because the nurse had had to cancel the basic scan, she'd requested a full MRI, which is absolutely right. But because of the corona scandal, there was a delay and there was no appointments. There were no appointments available. So it took us into March 2022. And, you know, that's a lot. He'd been ill since October. So this is a, you know, what, 5 month, 6 month time frame.
This is a long time.
Honestly. It is. And it wasn't for not trying. We were on top of things. You know, we're responsible people. And because he's been ill for such a long time and I have two chronic health conditions, we are very sensible about trying to manage our conditions and communicate with doctors and, you know, try and get everybody on board with, you know, the history and everything. So I woke up one day and, you know, it was funny. I just woke up one day and I got out of bed. I went downstairs. My husband was not making sense. I was having to repeat myself about five times with everything I said to him. It was like his hearing had gone. I started thinking he was getting dementia, Mark, you know, because he wasn't acting normally. He wasn't responding normally. He was struggling to have conversations on the phone with people. He just couldn't formulate sentences. And I took him, I rang at the doctor's. I secretly packed a bag for him without him knowing. I rang the doctor's and I got an emergency appointment. I packed an emergency bag. And I took him to the doctors and I hastened to add, because I've got my own health problems, I haven't driven the car that we've got. I haven't driven it for about 3 years. I have intermittently driven a smaller car that I have. Mm. But because I have chronic fatigue, I am allowed to legally drive, but I have to determine whether I feel well enough to drive. I don't drive because I want to have a safe journey and a safe everybody else to be safe. So I hadn't been driving for a while and I had had a bad episode of chronic fatigue, but I had to get my husband and we're new to the area. We've moved to a new area and we got in just before lockdown. So we do have sort of friends around, but some of them are quite elderly. We wouldn't want to put on them, you know, for help. So I took him in our car that I'm not used to driving. And that was a bit of a panic for me because I had to concentrate and I had this sick person with me. I got him to the doctors and this lady just looked at my husband and said, you poor man, you are so sick. We need to get you to the hospital. She made this call. She's called several hospitals and the problem was there were no beds. There were no beds because she wanted to be admitted.
But why were there no beds?
Because I don't know, but I'm assuming because the NHS was in chaos, we had COVID hoax going on, and
Oh, yeah,
we had
they needed to keep free the beds in case something strikes from
beds. That was not the policy. They weren't going to accept him, and she tried a few hospitals in the local area. So she said to me, take him to this particular hospital because the registrar who's on is good and I know that he'll get the help. But she said, you'll have to go through the A&E system, which might not be pleasant. You need to pack a bag and get him to the hospital as soon as possible. I said, I've already packed a bag. I was already ready. I'd had to do it so often with my husband with Crohn's. He's collapsed in front of me. He's collapsed at work. You know, I'm sort of used to sort of being prepared for what I need to put in the bag. And I'm not
Claire,
laughing.
can you quickly explain what is Crohn's disease?
Crohn's disease.
We are all not medical.
I mean, I'm not a medical. I'm not a medical person.
Just in short terms, what happens? Maybe
it's,
there.
It's an inflammation of the bowel which causes severe pain and blockages, horrendous diarrhea, weight loss. He's had it, like I said, for probably 40 years, just under 40 years
now.
Now.
I have heard about it. I knew it, but it's just that everybody's.
It's an awful illness. You know, the pain, there's been no medicine in the early years.
It's a chronic illness, no?
It's chronic.
Okay.
I won't say what my husband's job was, but if you knew, he dragged himself to work to do a really tough job. He did his job. He did it for a long time. It was I mean, he did have periods of sickness, but he was a hard worker. But my goodness, I don't know how he was even able to do his job, just simply because a lot of the time he was in constant pain with these inflammation.
I've heard about that because I know somebody that has the same sickness. It completely matches. But go ahead about your story. I just wanted to clarify this point for the listeners.
No, I'm happy. I'm happy you keep asking me questions and tell me when to stop. And I'm trying to think, where were we? So I took him to A&E. Now, in the UK, Mark, I don't know what's happening in Switzerland, but in the UK, we'd been told, we have some friends who are retired GPs who live in the local area. And when we moved here, you know, we all sort of got to know a lovely bunch of old, they're older than us. They're not old people, but they're older than us, but they're very kind. And they're from another village just down the road from where we live now. And there's a couple of these GPs, retired, who had always said about the hospital that we were being sent to with my husband for the A&E. They'd said in the past, if you have to go to hospital, try not to go to that one. It's terrible.
I just want to throw in something inside here. I was with my daughter, 10 years old, to the dentist.
Yes.
Now, that dentist has 3 degrees. He is a pharmacist.
Right.
He is a medical doctor, doctor, and he is a surgeon on how you say the where you put the braces. But he's a surgeon on this. No,
yes.
Yeah. So he's a doctor.
Oh, he's a clever man, very competent.
Yeah. The doctor plus he is a pharmacist. And
yes.
I told him, what do we do if something happens? He said, don't go. Don't go. Just don't go to the hospital.
Yes. Yes. And it was our biggest fear, Mark, because I said, oh, goodness forbid that we end up, we to just stay away from these hospitals, because we'd seen things where nurses were forcibly putting lateral flow tests up very vulnerable patients. We were seeing all these things on the internet that people had managed to film. So we were frightened. You know, we were already frightened. So obviously my husband was so ill. I mean, I could tell this was life-threatening. He had something seriously wrong with him. And at the back of my mind, you know, I knew it was cancer. I guess I did. And in October, you know, of 2021, because I am quite tuned into, I do get a lot of information through my heart center. I was busy working. I was in bed. I wasn't very well, but I was trying to use the time that I wasn't well to share information, other people's videos that I was finding online, to sort of, like a lot of us, we're trying to get information out so that people can see what's happening, to see that it's not a conspiracy theory, that these things are actually happening to people, and there's evidence, there's, you know, peer-reviewed evidence, there's video evidence. So we've collated all this. We've been watching everything from 2020. So when this happened to my husband, the last place we wanted to be was in the hospital. And also, because we're both very tuned into frequencies, we know that energetically, a hospital isn't a great place to be.
You want to be, and since they put 5G on top of the hospital, you know, I mean, it's not the place you want to go.
Mark, you know, when I took my husband eventually to the cancer unit, I know we're jumping, but just to say, I was going to different hospitals for my husband for scans, treatment, blood tests. So we were going to different hospitals in the area for different things. And I can feel the mobile phone waves. I was off grid. We were off grid in 2018. I didn't want to be on my phone. And we only went on when we needed to be on the internet. And we still are like that, because I can feel the energies and I can feel what they're doing to me. And then I have to spend time clearing myself. And I don't want to spend my day clearing myself of 5G and mobile 4G and Wi-Fi microwave energy. So it takes a lot of concentration and time to clear your energy fields, which is what I can do. My husband can do it. But when you go somewhere like that, you end up, you're like a sponge. You pick up all the toxic energy that's there.
Yeah, that will be the topic. That will be the topic a bit of our next exactly what can we do? Very simple solutions, maybe.
There are simple solutions.
But go ahead with the story. Go ahead with the story. What happened to you then?
We got to A&E and we queued up. And my husband doesn't wear a mask and I don't. My husband nearly passed out when he wore a mask.
Me neither. Me neither. We don't
wear them. And if you look on the NHS government website about mask wearing, even if you don't go and research, which people should go and research, what the WHO used to say about mask wearing, which was it wasn't a good idea. When I was flying, a lot of Japanese passengers wore masks. The airline that I worked for had a fantastic aviation medical department. They always said that mask wearing was dangerous and it wasn't a good idea. There's peer-reviewed research on it to say that it's harmful and destroys brain cells. So anybody can go out and find this research. So we were well aware of that. And we looked at what the exemptions were and we said, we're exempt. So, and if you're exempt, nobody by law is meant to, including doctors, ask you why you're exempt. You do not have to discuss that. And it's important that anybody in the UK particularly, but in other countries as well, you should go on and have a look at your government and health body.
I was just listening, and what you say is very correct, because I was listening to Todd Callender from the US.
Yes.
He said the same thing.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
You don't need to explain anything.
No, it's
and
illegal.
If they ask you, it's already an infringement into your medical records.
Absolutely. So
I take
my husband to the reception desk, and there's a lady there who's not very friendly and not particularly nice. And it was obvious my husband was at death's door by looking at his emaciated state and his pallor. And she wasn't very nice to us. You know, she jumped over me when I was trying to explain. I had a doctor's note. I had had the foresight because I'm used to needing to be prepared for things, although I haven't had to be prepared in recent times. But I have always said we must have that letter that gives your entire history so that if you ever end up in hospital or we have to see a new doctor, you can give it to them and they can read it. And the history is all there of everything that's happened to you in a condensed format. So I had that letter, which I'd also given to them. But the doctor had booked us in. Our GP had sent him there with an overnight bag. And she very sarcastically said to my husband, "Would you like a mask?" And I'm sorry to say it, but that's how she said it. And she picked up this mask and dangled it behind her, you know, the plastic protective shield that they've got so patients don't kill them with the hoax COVID.
Horrible, horrible.
So, you know, but it bears me, my husband's really sick and this woman's being mean to him. And I just said, he's exempt. You know, he's exempt. And that should be the end of the matter. But you don't want to get angry, because you know if you get angry, they might be mean to the person who's ill, who's got to be cared for. So you get put in that situation, don't you, where inside you want to rise to their defence. But you know that if you rise to their defence too much, you might actually make it difficult for the person.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I've been the finance director of the biggest healthcare company in Switzerland, in Zurich, the healthcare insurance company. So we had all data that was back, this is back 30 years, we had all data about every doctor in Switzerland, what he prescribes, how many times, why, everything at a time.
Yeah.
Absolute supercomputers now. I would like, we have about 14 minutes left.
Oh, is that all? Goodness.
Time flies. I would like to come back a bit. So I have worked for the system, for the healthcare system, now from a very specific perspective, not from the hospital. I've been working in elderly homes. When I went to the French-speaking part of Switzerland to learn French, this is kind of what we do. I was working 2 years in the French-speaking part.
Wow.
Anyway, but so I have a bit of ground experience, but only as a small boy, you know, treating people and really washing them and cleaning them, the elderly people, so that they don't have a kind of red marks that start to infect and things like that. But not much more, but certainly I've very well I've a great insight into insurance companies, health insurance companies, and so what I have noticed is those are systems. You see, everywhere in the world it's the same. It's in Switzerland the same, NHS in your place, in America. We affront some systems, be it financial system, economical systems, you name it. One of them is the healthcare system.
Definitely.
The system.
Yeah. You know, Mark,
would you like to talk to me a little bit more, like how did you perceive the system? The system putting pressure on you or facilitating things as well.
I wasn't allowed to go in. I'll be very quick, but I wasn't allowed to go in with him. He had his mobile phone with him. I was very upset to be leaving him because I was concerned he wouldn't be able to furnish the doctor with all the information. So I left him. And I do feel upset about it, Mark. I'm sorry. It was a horrible experience to have that woman be like that with someone who was so ill and defenseless.
And you can, you know, there's one.
And
one.
I had to leave him. And when I left him, he went into A&E, Mark. And I do need to tell you this in case people didn't listen to that recording I did. The clock is ticking. TikTok. I didn't know I was going to get the information I got. But, you know, I did get upset on that because I haven't really expressed what's gone on in my life to anyone, not really a few close friends, but they're all vaccinated. So I couldn't talk to them about all the issues.
Of
I didn't
course.
Really want to put
because,
that on them.
Yeah, it's because these people are in denial.
You know, they're seeing different, but they've been wonderful friends and we've had a lot of support, but we haven't been able to talk to them about things that have really frightened us or worried us about this pressure of the pyramid mind control system. But I will be very quick because it is important that When my husband went through, there was a woman who kept opening a hatch and slamming it down and calling people's names. Now, I was unaware of this. I was driving home. I heard my phone go. I stopped the car, parked up, and I got this message from my husband saying, "I don't like it here. I don't like the energy. I want to come home." A nurse has just shouted at me. So he said the nurse had told him that she didn't know why his doctor had sent him there. There were no beds and it was pointless. So I thought, oh my God, what do I do? You know, and obviously I'm not medically qualified, but I phoned his specialist nurse, who's this wonderful woman, highly competent. There's a lot of them in the NHS, and I want to emphasize that there's a lot of good people. We met a lot of good people, and a lot of people were very kind. There's just the odd ones, like there is in every system. Most people are very good most of the time, but I phoned up his specialist nurse and said, and she fortunately happened to be at work, and she'd been in on, you know, I told her I'd taken him to hospital, and then she very kindly said, "Keep me posted." That's how nice she is. So I rang her. She fortunately was still at work, and she said, "Claire, that's bang out of order. That is so unprofessional. I'm so annoyed that that nurse should not have said that to him. One, it's unprofessional. Two, it'll cause upset to the patient. And three, she's not a doctor. He needs a diagnosis before he leaves that hospital. There's something terribly wrong. We've got to get him scanned. We've got to find out what's happening to him." So I had to send a text back to my husband saying, "You've got to stay. Your nurse says, you know, her name, so-and-so says, you've got to, you know, you must stay and get a diagnosis." So I then continued my drive home, trying to concentrate and trying not to cry, and just thinking, what the hell is going to happen to him, excuse my French, in the hospital. And during the time that he was in hospital, he texted me a few times, but his phone was running low on battery and there was nowhere to plug it in, although he did have a charger. I'd put all that in his bag. But he said several times people kept coming up to him to try and ask him for a lateral flow test, which even in his most vulnerable state, because he's very versed and researched all these things, he said, "I don't want one." And in the end, he was very polite, he was very calm. He just said, "No, thank you, I don't want one." Well, you see, in the hospital, they want everybody lateral flow because they want to tell whether you've got COVID. And we all know that these lateral flow tests can't detect COVID, nor can the PCR. It's a complete scam. And also, we know what is on these lateral flow, that they're covered in poisons, which are carcinogenic and damaging to health. So he didn't want one. So he said no, but it was that pressure when you're vulnerable of people keeping asking you to do something that you don't want to do. And they're all junior nurses, you know, the ones who are doing the lateral.
I do flow. Understand. Listen, Claire.
Yes.
Claire, I do perfectly understand. When the second wife of my father died,
yes,
I went to the hospital. I didn't have a very close relationship with her, to be very honest, but a normal relationship. I was allowed to go there without mask.
Yes.
The day before she died.
Mm-hmm. How sad.
And, you know, I mean, I, from my experience where I was working, I was, let's say, really washing people when I was very young, because it was from the French language experience. And, but since I was resident there in the elderly home, and since sometimes, you know, the nurses were having had a lot of work, so I stayed back with the people that were dying.
Yes.
So, and then I was 16. So I because I was anyway there, I kept up a night and accompanied the people that were dying.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yeah. No. But what I can say, I can see the color of the skin, and I know the state. The color of the skin will tell you the state. You don't need to do anything else. You look at the skin.
You know,
and do you agree with that?
Yes, I would. And you know, they were just in a mind controlled state. That was my husband's view, was it was like being on the sinking ship in a mind controlled prison where they're all doing these things. They don't really understand why. They don't understand anybody who doesn't want it. They end up being a bit of an enigma. And if you can imagine from a husband's point of view, he was worried that refusing to do those things might impact on
No,
the care he would get.
no, we have about 4 minutes left, but he was right. He was completely right.
Yes, he
because
and he,
you are born free.
Yes.
This you are born free. It's written in the Bible. Honestly, it's written in the Bible. You are born free. For
yes.
you are born free is written in most of the of each and every country's constitution.
Yes.
You have a choice.
Yes.
Make your choice.
Yes.
And
it was hard for him to push
and he
that
did
point.
his choice. And
Yes.
that choice
With no.
saved his life.
Well, I think it did. And I would say
And
that
that
the
is very strong. That
Yeah.
is the
Yeah.
strongest signal you can give. I do not consent.
And
I
when
am here to choose what I want you to do to my body. You know?
Yeah, and I think people need to be brave and polite. My husband was always very polite, but he was very quietly firm. And that unsettled the hospital. It does unsettle them. I'm not saying everybody, but it unsettled them. I think it sowed seeds because we have had certain nurses come up to us since he's had the all clear of stage 4 cancer of the liver, spleen and lower bowel, and the bowel. That's what he was diagnosed with, Hodgkin's lymphoma. And the doctors were very good. Once he got to see a doctor, they had a scan. The only thing was he was on a hard seat for about 15 hours before he was able to go into a room that had a bed in it. So he sat as an ill person with everybody else who was very sick for about 15 hours on a hard seat, you know.
Unbelievable. I mean,
And they say,
now, listen, Claire, we have about 2 minutes left. I would like to round it up.
Yes.
We all got the picture so far.
Oh,
this
that's
is
good.
We got the picture, and as I said, I made similar experience. It's not very same, it's clear. They are similar.
Same things.
Now, what I would say is you have written books as well.
I've written five
please,
books, which
exactly,
I've
please
combined
do,
into one book.
please do send me, as I said, the book links, maybe, where people...
I've sent it to you during
All
the...
All right. Okay.
It's actually called... I'm not trying to... You know, the thing is, I'm not sure it's for everyone, but the books were
That's
to help
okay.
humanity
That's
because
okay.
I was told that humanity were in trouble, and
it goes much deeper than what we are discussing here. This is clear, but this is a real life experience that you are sharing with us, how you kind of got rejected, but at the same time found very nice people. It's kind of paradox, no? I picture it. I know it. We all have lived through it in one or the other way. Even if people went to shopping, no, they have made similar experiences. Now, I would like to close that conversation in saying, if you listen to this podcast on reflexivityspace.org, on Claire's social media channels, you are the resistance. I wish you a beautiful night and talk to you next week. Thank
you
you very much.
Thank you, Mom.
My
Thank you,
life
everyone.
You.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.